Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Movie Mastery in Theaters Now. It's the show where we watch the movies you tell us to, and in this one, it's all brand new and in Theatro's aura.
I like how you actually thought up the Spanish word for now, after Theatro's.
Yeah, Theatro's aura.
God, that's awful.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm basically running for vice president now, I guess. That's what I'm doing.
Except that Tim Kaine speaks Spanish. Unless you're saying you're running as the Mike Pence of vice presidential
yes,
candidate.
Yes, that's true. That is what I'm doing.
You have always had the stink of Indiana about you.
The great shameful stink of Indiana.
You smell like a big fried pork sandwich.
Well, I mean, that much is true. So, this time around, this month, our most voted on movie was Ghostbusters.
And so we dug out a copy. I don't understand if you guys realize what in theaters now means exactly.
Oh, Jeff.
So,
oh, you sweet summer child.
I pulled out my DVD of Ghostbusters, which is easy to find. I mean, you got that Tim Murray.
Yeah.
It's got Bill Murray in it. Who the hell was I thinking of?
I think you were thinking of Bruce Greenwood.
I think I might have been thinking of Tim Curry.
Man, if Tim Curry was in Ghostbusters, how rad would that be?
That'd be amazing. What if Slimer just had Tim Curry's voice?
What if Slimer was actually just Tim Curry? And he just runs at Bill Murray and he's like, ah!
Give me that sesame cake.
I want those hot dogs.
I'm going to sing a song about them.
Ah, because they're Frankenfurters. Tim Curry. Oh, my God.
I'm a little floating ghost because everything floats.
So, so I'm John. That's Jeff.
Hello.
We're the ones reviewing this. And a little different from how the normal Movie Mastery works for the In Theaters Now, we give you a spoiler-free because maybe you're listening to this and you haven't actually watched the movie yet and you want to go see it and you want our opinion first before you go see it. You cherish our opinion so much that you are unwilling to go to the theater until we tell you about it.
I don't think that's happening. Although in this case, I think there are a lot of people waiting to see if they want to go see the movie because it's got that crazy amount of internet divisiveness about it.
It's got that stink of men's rights.
Yeah, there's some real negative nonsense happening around on the internet on this one. So there may be some people fence sitting here. So good. Here's your chance to hear all about it. Non-spoiler.
So, non-spoiler for the first part, and then we'll play a little music so you have a chance to stop, go see a movie, and then come back. And then we will get into the full spoiler review. But to start off with, let me just ask, okay, this movie, was it funny? Did you find it amusing?
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of this movie is very funny. Every one of the main characters has their own kind of quirks, and they get to tell their own kind of jokes. There's a lot of through lines in the film. Yeah, it was definitely a funny movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you know, no spoilers, but just special effects, real good.
Yeah, very good.
Ghosts look very nice. They're very pretty ghosts.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they're that ghost in the beginning, the equivalent of the librarian ghost from
yes.
the original Ghostbusters. For a second, I thought she was played by Maya Rudolph. There was like a brief moment where I was like, oh, they got one of their other Saturday Night Live friends in here to do this ghost. It's not her. It would have been great. Yeah, it would have been really neat if the owner of an 1810s mansion was black, but, you know, that's not the case.
No.
So, anyway.
So, yeah, I'd say so far, basically, humor's good, effects are good.
Yeah.
And
what else are you looking for in this thing? Action, I guess? Is the action cool?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some neat action scenes in this. I mean, you wouldn't really expect there to be because it's, you know, there actually aren't that many amazing action scenes in Ghostbusters movies.
No.
That's never
generally
been the
point. Not what you're going into a Ghostbusters movie for.
No, what you're going into Ghostbusters movies for is that sweet, sweet Ernie Hudson.
Oh, that sweet Hudson.
Which is why I've been so disappointed all these years.
So disappointed.
There's not enough Ernie Hudson in these things. There never has been.
No, and that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, you see Ernie Hudson in his other projects and you're like, man, you're real good.
Yeah.
I'm sad that they didn't use you more.
I know. He's sad they didn't use him more. That's like one of the more famous stories about the first Ghostbusters movie is that when he accepted the script, his character was introduced on page 8. And then when he showed up for the readings and to actually be in the movie, his character appeared on page 68.
Yeah. Which I'll go ahead and say, I mean, no spoilers or anything, but Leslie Jones, who plays Patty.
Yeah.
I would like to have had more from her in this film.
Me too. She does have the late introduction thing, although it's nowhere near as late, and she doesn't just show up at the Ghostbusters house and be like, hey, I want to work here, and that's the end of me talking.
Yeah. Like, she definitely has way more of an arc. She's more integral to the story.
She has skills. You know, one of the other things about the Ernie Hudson character, about Winston Zeddemore, is that in the original draft of the script, his character was supposed to have military training.
Ah.
And that was going to be the big thing he brought to the Ghostbusters as a team. Instead, what he brought was, as far as I could tell, was just hunger for a paycheck and sort of an implacable attitude.
Yeah.
That was all they left him with.
What he brought to the Ghostbusters team was a fourth body.
Yep.
So
she has a lot more to do, and she's very funny. She gets to be in on all the jokes.
Yeah, but I would say I'd like to have seen her get more to do.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't the perfect handling, I think, of the character, but it was still good.
It was still very good, yeah. I mean, I kind of wish that, because, again, it boils down to being three doctors and a black person.
Yeah, and that's the main sort of issue I have with it. If they had played up the skills that she has that aren't science a little more...
I thought they did a fairly good job. The whole thing they give her, and this definitely wouldn't be a spoiler, is that she's a New York historian.
Yeah, she knows a lot about New York.
And it comes up, and it comes in handy a couple of times throughout the movie. I would have liked to see a little more. I would have liked to see her be a doctor, but of something else. With her being like, well, I've got a doctorate in history. What?
Then that's why I work for the Subway, because what else do you get as a job with a doctorate in history?
Yeah, and it's a union job, and it pays real good. I'm smart.
Yeah.
So, anyway, she's great. Kristen Wiig's character, let's see, that would be, oh, man, what was her character's name?
Erin?
Erin Gilbert.
Yeah.
Great character. People are calling her the spiritual successor to Bill Murray in the movie. I don't really think that's the case.
Yeah, when I first went into this, I was thinking that we were going to have a lot of one-to-one comparisons between people.
Oh, yeah, and you can even see it going in. You've got your kind of regular-looking brown-haired person. There's your Bill Murray. You've got your heavier-set person. There's your Dan Aykroyd. There's one who's always wearing glasses. There's your Egon.
There's a black person.
There's a black person. It parallels real easy if you squint. But the movie doesn't fall for that trap.
No, it is not just a straight up, we made these exact same characters, but now they are ladies. They are definitely very distinct characters on their own.
Very much so. It's so much so that if they were to be implanted into another Ghostbusters movie with the Ghostbusters from the first couple movies, it wouldn't be like, oh, these are just girl versions of us. They'd be like, hey, four new characters.
Yeah.
So they're very well, the writing is fantastic. I'd also call this movie out for an incredible amount of very good cameos.
Yeah. So, just sort of an overall good, bad on there. I'm going to give this a definite watch in theaters.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't one that I'd say, oh, you can just skip and wait until it goes to, you know, Netflix or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good movie to go see in theaters. One, if you want to support there actually being movies that are about ladies that aren't just about ladies being in a relationship.
Or being hot. They're wearing trash outfits the entire movie.
Oh, yeah. This movie has, like, no jokes about relationships and no jokes about, oh, I needed to get all sexed up.
In fact, even in the sequences where they're not in their Ghostbuster outfits, they're still, none of them are dressing sexy constantly. It's almost refreshing to see what is basically a Ghostbusters movie with just women in the at the lead being funny and smart instead of
having to worry about being, you know, objects for people.
Ass out, boobs up. Yeah, it wasn't a problem.
Yeah.
Great movie.
So, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give this a strong recommend. Go
Absolutely.
Ahead and see this in theaters.
I'll go ahead and say better than Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, man, I love Ghostbusters 2, like, almost more than Ghostbusters 1.
Yeah, but I'm still not wrong, am I?
I don't know, I mean, man.
Okay, let's say that you took Ghostbusters 2 and you excised the 5 minutes of Peter McNichol.
Oh, okay. Then yes, definitely.
All right, great.
Peter McNichol is a treasure.
He is.
A national treasure.
He absolutely is.
Cage keeps trying to find Peter McNichol.
He made me watch like 3 seasons of Ally McBeal.
Right?
I was like, I'll watch this because of Peter McNichol. Sure. I don't care about any of this other stuff.
Yeah.
Although now I know I should have cared a lot more about Jane Krakowski because she's also amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get into the spoilers here.
All right, so we'll be right back with our spoilerful review after this. If there's something strange sleeping in your bed, let me tell you something. If there's something weird sleeping in your bed, oh, let me tell you something. We'll be right back. And welcome back. It is time for so many spoilers. All of the spoilers. You would think that we were doing some weird street racing with all the spoilers we've got here.
All the Ghostbusters die.
Aw, not all of them. Not every Ghostbuster truly lives.
That's true. I think Rick Moranis was an honorary Ghostbuster in one of those movies, and so he doesn't die in this movie, but that's because he's not in it.
That's your first spoiler. Rick Moranis.
Also, all the extreme Ghostbusters are in this movie.
All of them.
And the original Ghostbusters, like the two mystery-solving brothers and their gorilla that wears, like, lederhosen, all in this movie.
All of them.
Yeah.
Every last one of them.
All right, you ready for actual spoilers? Let's talk about the plot.
Okay, so let me just say...
Smash cut. The movie begins.
Yeah, that's weird, right? The movie begins? I wasn't expecting that. You go into one of these and you're like, oh man, I cannot wait until this movie is halfway done. And then it begins on you.
I also like that it opens with a smash cut. Smash cut to a star wipe.
Smash mouth.
Smash cut to smash mouth. They are eating the eggs.
Smash mouth to a star wipe. He uses to wipe his face.
Okay, so it opens with some shots of a local mansion in New York.
Yeah.
Which is there's a tour being led through it. And basically, this is the first introduction to what you're going to get throughout this movie, which is like every New York like improv comedian of the past 10 years is in this thing. And so notably, almost everyone in the movie has a bit of business to do. Like even if they're a super minor character, they have a couple of jokes to toss in there.
Yeah.
So we open with the guy who played Gabe on The Office. I think his name is Zach something or other.
Galifianakis.
No, that's... No.
Penn.
No. Yeah. It's Zach Wilde, the guitarist for Ozzy. Yeah. Well known in the New York improv scene.
Obviously.
Zach Wilde. Whenever... Because he just blends and disappears into a character. You'd never think he's a 7-foot-tall Viking god.
You're always just like, yeah, that guy seems like Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I could see him as a bus driver who was also a kleptomaniac. Okay. I forget the guy's name, but he played Gabe on The Office, and he gets to open up by doing a little tour of a stuffy, austere 1800s mansion in New York, which he describes as having a face bidet and an anti-Irish fence.
Yes. So there's a few really good... Goofy little jokes at the start there.
Yeah, he gets business. It's pretty great to see him get the business.
Yeah, everyone gets a little business.
Yeah. especially.
Clint Howard. Clint Howard gets the heavy business in this.
There's a lot of Clint Howard's heavy business in this movie. Spoiler alert, Clint Howard is not in this film.
However, his heavy business is.
They brought in a canister of Clint Howard's business and just sprinkled it everywhere.
To taste.
And to smell.
So we get a little bit of haunted nonsense story about how a daughter died there.
After killing everyone and getting locked in a basement, yeah.
Yeah, and so then we get our much longer than sort of the beginning librarian thing where you're like, oh, there's something here, and it only takes like 30 seconds to really start that off.
Yeah, this one has a very about a 5-minute worth of intro there.
Yeah, it's like an actual thing happening.
Yeah.
And I'd also say one thing in this movie that's way more than you'd get in the original Ghostbusters is this is much more willing to be scary and a little more over the top.
Although, I'm going to be honest here, the original Ghostbusters scared me so bad when I was like 6 and I saw it in the theaters that I jumped out of my seat and into the lap of the people in the seat behind me in the movie theater.
Wow.
And it was those dog statues that got me.
See, that's weird. Because the only thing that was remotely frightening to me was the librarian scene.
I don't even remember the librarian scene from being 6. Maybe I had my eyes closed, but those dog statues got me bad.
Wow, that's weird.
I know.
You got some weird things that freak you out.
Uh-huh.
Like dog statues, aliens.
Okay, if aliens aren't scary, then why is there a whole genre of alien films that are horror movies?
I don't know, man.
What's your scariest thing? What scares you the most in movies?
I don't know, strong female characters.
Yeah, I can't stand it. Yeah.
That's why I was so frightened throughout this entire movie.
A black lead with anything other than a Mexican love interest? Because if you get another black lead in there, now it's a black movie.
Oh, no.
God, I hate Hollywood so much.
Damn you, Hollywood.
Although,
stop it.
I mean, I got to be super honest here. All that stuff about Black Panther that we saw from the Comic-Con stuff this weekend, that is awesome.
I cannot wait.
Oh, it looks so good. It's got so many great characters. And Michael B. Jordan is in there as Killmonger. Which, by the way...
Keep, keep stealing human torches.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, anyone else who gets cast as a human torch, take them. Also, though, since we've got, they announced Brie Larson as being Captain Marvel, that means that what we've seen a lot of is people plucking characters out of Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
You know what's weird to me and why I was always confused about Brie Larson is I always confuse her with Allison Brie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And in my head, I just swap that in my brain. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, this movie.
This movie.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so, okay, we get that intro sequence, and yeah, it does allow itself to be a little bit scary.
So instead of just like a, oh, there's a purple light, and then we cut away, like, this guy is trapped in a room, and, like, everything's collapsing.
There's slime coming up out of the floor, and it's all bright green, and there's smoke everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you definitely, once the scene ends, you're like, oh, that guy's dead.
Yeah.
He is 100% dead now.
He's a dead guy.
Yeah, you're like, I think I just saw that guy die. That was weird.
Yeah. So anyway, we cut to Erin Gilbert in her college. Kristen Wiig is playing this character. She is a like a college professor who is getting ready because I guess she thinks she's about to get tenure at Princeton.
Yeah.
And so she's doing a couple of bits of business as she preps to teach a large class when, wouldn't you know it, but Ed Begley Jr. comes in.
I hate when I'm trying to do something and Ed Begley Jr. comes in. And he's always just like, hey, do you have any cream cheese? And I'm like, God damn it. Will you get out of here?
Hey, do you have any nails? No? Well, then do you have any cream cheese?
Damn it, Ed Begley Jr. That is a terrible joke, and I need you to get out.
If you ask me for cream cheese one more time, I'm going to nail your electric car to the floor.
So he has a book of Erin's that she wrote many years ago with a friend about ghosts, both literal and figurative. And so she's like, oh my God, I can't believe this. I can't get tenure if people know that I'm a ghost person.
Yes.
I'm all about ghosts.
Yeah, so she tries to deny that she wrote the book, et cetera, et cetera. And then she has to go talk to her boss briefly, and her boss turns out to be awesome, awesome actor Charles Dance.
Yeah, everyone in this. Amazing. Yeah.
So Charles Dance is there, and he plays the stuffiest person in the world. I forget what it was specifically. I think it was like he needs her to get a letter of recommendation from a more prestigious college than the one she has. And
yeah, it was like more prestigious than like Stanford or Yale or something.
Yale, and he was like, yes.
Yes.
Which is amazing. So anyway, she goes off to confront the person who also wrote the ghost book with her, which is Melissa McCarthy's character in the film. So she goes off to meet Melissa McCarthy at a way, way worse college.
Yeah, and that's Abby, the character of Abby.
Yes, Abby, who is a fringe scientist type.
Yes.
So we meet her, and she's got a crazy beepy thing on her head.
Yeah, she kind of looks like Doc Brown in the 50s, just being like, I can read your thoughts, Marty.
Yeah, I'm gonna say, of all the characters in this movie, I've seen a lot of them in a lot of different things. I feel like Melissa McCarthy tends to play the same sort of character pretty much in everything. And so in this case was not that big of a difference. She always just plays the big brassy person who doesn't take a lot of shit. That's like her thing.
Yeah, although I'd say I liked her better in this than I have in
just about
basically anything yeah. else I've seen her in.
I mean, I was okay with her in Bridesmaids.
I think the reason I like her more in this is because she toned it down a little.
Yeah, in Bridesmaids, I feel like she's straight up doing Chris Farley.
Yeah, and the problem I have is so much the characters she has are so over the top that I feel like it overshadows the other people that she's acting across from.
Yeah.
I mean, for good or ill. Like, if you're going to go ahead and overshadow some people that are just awful, great, whatever, but when you're in a good cast, then I think, especially in something like this, which is much more ensemble, having her not have that personality dialed up so high,
yeah,
I think was nice.
Yeah, and, you know, she did a fantastic job in this movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just the little relationships she has, and that's one of those big things in the original Ghostbusters that was so important, was all the little bits that you get between characters.
Yeah, that's 90% of what people remember about the Ghostbusters movies. You never hear anyone waxing rhapsodic about how good Gozer looked.
No.
It's always people quoting the Egon line about how he had a part of a slinky as a child.
Yeah, it's all like the weird looks that people give.
Yeah.
Or like the scene where he almost gives Egon a candy bar and he's like, you earned it. It's great.
Yeah.
There's these wonderful little plays between people.
Yeah, and you get those a lot in this movie as well. In this moment, there's a big confrontation between Erin and Abby, and they yell at each other for a while, and then Abby stomps off for a second. I think she's mad about soup. And then we get introduced to the third member of the Ghostbusters in by far the coolest performance in the movie.
Yes. I know I said that McCarthy had to tone it down a little not to overshadow people, but let me just tell you, McKinnon straight wrecks everyone's shit in this. She is scene-stealing every time she is on screen.
Oh, yeah. Even if she's in the background not really doing anything, you're still watching her instead of whatever else is going on.
She's like, I can't wait until she does something.
She always has business. She says two huge shakers full of Clint Howard's heavy business. She lit them on fire. She's shaking them around everywhere, getting fiery Clint Howard everywhere. It's fantastic what she's doing. So she opens with a scene that I guarantee you is going to be a formative moment in 13-year-old lesbian's now's life. It's going to be kind of like the scene from Fast Times at Ridgemont High for boys of a certain age, you know, where they're walking across the pool and opening up the top. Because she starts with a, hey, come here often, line to Kristen Wiig that's just amazing.
Yeah.
She's just on point all the way through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So she is playing Holtzman, which people would probably try to track to the Egon character, but it really isn't. Because Egon's whole joke, the big thing about Egon, before they turned him into a spit curl surfer guy wearing Sally Jesse Raphael glasses in the cartoon, with a rat tail, by the way. I never understood that.
Oh, yeah. He had like a soft serve ice cream cone on top of his head and a rat tail.
He had a wave curl pompadour with a rat tail and Sally Jesse Raphael glasses. Also, he was a bottle blonde.
Weird.
Weird choices. I've already seen people try to do animated versions of the new four Ghostbusters, and they keep getting to the point where you can tell who they are, and I'm like, you guys are doing it wrong. Unless you draw Ray as like a 16-year-old redhead, which is how they did it on the real Ghostbusters, you can't have it.
So anyway,
she's fantastic. So right off the bat, she's fantastic.
Yeah, no, Holtzman is great. Throughout the whole movie, she is just, even in the background, always doing something, and sort of in the opposite way that Egon's whole thing was being super subdued.
Yeah, personalityless. Oh my gosh, completely. Yeah. That was my original point.
Yeah, so in the way that he was very much just like deadpan delivery, everything
is dead.
Yeah, everything was very monotone with him. Mm-hmm. With Holtzman, even though she doesn't go over the top like yelling things, she's just very intense.
That's true. That's a big part of what makes her character so efficient. She's not yelling. She's not Jim Carreying all over the place until she accidentally Jim Carreys your toilet real bad.
Yeah, Jim Carreys up your toilet. Jim Carreys out the window.
Yeah, you don't get that. She's not yelling and ranting and mugging, but instead she just has a very intense presence that is fantastic.
Yeah, just that very manic energy that is expressed very well without going, you know, over the top Jim Carrey.
Yeah, her character is going to be the reason that this movie gets a sequel.
Oh, hell yeah. I absolutely love that character.
Yeah. So anyway, she gets introduced and immediately plays an awesome joke on Kristen Wiig, which I don't want to get into.
No, I don't even want to spoil that one because it is one of the better jokes in that film.
Pretty much. So they fight over whether or not Abby should have re-released that book, and then they all decide to go together to the Aldrich Mansion to see if there's a ghost there after they hear about it from a guy who delivered food.
Well, it was from, because Ed Begley Jr.
Oh,
wanted, that
right,
was his
right,
original
right.
reason
yeah,
he visited.
Sorry. That's right, it was Ed Begley Jr., and he's the historian for the Aldrich Mansion. And so he invites her to come out there, and she ends up bringing Abby and Holtzman, or rather going along with them.
Yeah. And it's, hey, if I come along and introduce you to them, then you'll promise to take the book down.
Yeah, and that leads to one of my favorite jokes in the movie, the scene where they meet the guy, Gabe from The Office on the street outside. Again, I don't even want to tell you what the joke is, because it's a very well-crafted joke. So I'm just going to, I love that sequence. It's, again, another bit of business for a character who isn't a main character in this movie that's fantastic.
Yeah, everyone who gets any amount of screen time, even the guy who's the delivery guy for the restaurant that shows up a bunch of times, Benny,
yeah,
the character.
Benny.
He's wonderful. And again, a guy who's an actor who's just sort of a bit character actor, does a bunch of like little comedy things.
Yeah, if there's anyone who doesn't get a whole lot of really good shit to do, I'd say it's probably Neil Casey, who plays the bad guy.
Yeah.
I really like his character. I like the concept. I almost feel like they wrote that character and put him into the movie after they saw the fan reactions to the movie. Because he plays a snivelly little nice guy of a character.
Yeah, he's like, oh, no one ever appreciated me.
The world owes me friendship and tolerance. I'm a genius and no one notices. Yeah. So he plays that. And it's like, wow, did they know going in that they were going to have these kind of people be mad at them on the internet?
Well, yeah. I mean, after you know, they go into the that mansion and find your crazy ghost, and from the trailer you get that vomit scene.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that happens, but then they put the video of that up online, and of course there's a scene where they're going through the comments on it, and it's basically like the internet comments on Ghostbusters.
Like, you know they added those after the fact, with the ain't no bitches gonna hunt no ghost line.
Oh yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah,
I was like, oh man, oh, you're so meta.
Right, so they go into the mansion, and sure enough, they encounter Gertrude Aldrich, the evil ghost. And it's a really cool scene. It's one that we can actually talk about because it's in the trailer. She comes floating up while they all spout Ghostbusters-style technobabble at each other.
And
which, same commitment to the technobabble as in the first couple of movies, and also same commitment to technobabble as you'd expect from, like, Geordi.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll ruin just a joke for you, but this is the sort of thing I'm talking about with Holtzman. When this is happening, you have Aaron and Abby just yammering back and forth at each other with all that, like, ghost techno babble, and Holtzman straight takes out a can of Pringles and starts eating it, and they're like, what the fuck are you doing? And she's like, oh no, this is great. I gotta have, you can't resist these salty parabolas.
Yeah, which is some pretty blatant product placement, but I'm all right with it.
It was hilarious to me because it's the kind of thing I would see that character doing.
Yeah, that's fair enough. She's just eating Pringles, and then later in the scene, she just straight up has Pringle on her face.
Yeah.
So a ghost comes out and it barfs on Kristen Wiig's character, which is practically the one of the major running gags her character gets, is that she's the one who always gets barfed on.
Yeah.
And for like a minute, it's just barfing goo all over her. And then it flies out the window, and then they're all happy that they saw a ghost and videotaped it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she gets fired.
Yeah. So she gets fired, which makes the three of them want to go into business for themselves. We get a little gag where they almost go into the firehouse, and then they find out how much it would cost to rent that, and immediately are not going to do that.
Yeah, they were like, okay, look at this firehouse. And of course, they do it exactly the way you'd expect them to do it in the movie, if it was a regular reboot, which is sort of, hey, we have to go back to the firehouse. We'll show it like it's a character. Look at this, everybody. It's the firehouse. And then they step inside, and they're all dancing around about how amazing it is. And the real estate agent is like, okay, that's all well and good. It's $21,000 a month.
Fuck you.
But burn in hell. Which is, I love that that's straight up a send-up of how New York has changed since 1984.
Yeah.
In 1984, you probably could rent a decrepit firehouse in New York for fairly cheap and set up a dumb business in it. But that's pre-Giuliani's New York, where now all you can do in New York is set up a place to hate Muslims from, like, professionally.
Yes. Like Giuliani's house.
That's what he does now.
Yeah.
Take credit for 9/11 professionally?
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Yeah. I did it. I saved everyone. It was me.
I did it. I caused 9/11.
I was 9/11. I was both planes.
I 9/11'd all over the place. I 9/11'd your toilet.
Real bad.
Sorry about
then
that.
Then I 9/11'd out the window. Well, it was all four planes, but whatever. Anyway.
So we get that gag, and then they get the a space above the restaurant that Abby is always ordering from.
Mm-hmm.
So more jokes with that.
Yeah, more Benny. And yeah, now they're in a spot above a Chinese restaurant. That's the new Ghostbusters head office.
And then we get introduced to our last character, which is Patty, who is working in the subway station.
Yeah, she's some kind of like MTS official. It's kind of nebulous what her job is exactly, because she's greeting people from in one of them little booth windows. It looks like she's an information officer.
Probably.
But then the bad guy of the movie shows up briefly, says some very creepy stuff to her.
Starts talking about like the fourth apocalypse.
Yeah, fourth cataclysm.
Yeah. And you're like, okay, great, thank you, creepy guy.
Yeah, and then he goes running off down the tracks, and it's because he's setting up one of the film's MacGuffin mysteries. They keep showing these little machines in the movie that make blue light and summon ghosts.
Yeah, so just a weird little, like the opposite of the proton pack thing. Instead of being able to repel or control or destroy ghosts, it amplifies the energy. So it's a little bit like the Ghostbusters 2 goo.
Yeah, it's kind of like the positive slime.
Yeah. Well, it's like, or the negative slime. It both creates ghosts.
I guess it doesn't. Yeah. I just figured it was a sort of byproduct of psychokinetic energy or whatever they called it in that movie. It's just like, where there's ghosts, there's slime around. So this is a question I've always wanted to talk about, rather than just straight up going a play-by-play through this whole movie. Are the ghosts in the Ghostbusters films the ghosts of people?
Yes.
Okay, so, like, for example, I know that they've always said that Slimer is the ghost of John Belushi.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's what they thought in the first Ghostbusters movie. They were like, let's put John Belushi in the movie. We can't. He's dead. Okay, let's put his ghost in the movie as a gag. And that's why he's all gross and slobbery and so on. And I feel like this movie actually does an amazing job paying homage to that by throwing in some Animal House references for Slimer.
Yeah.
Who was very briefly in this. And I know that's a spoiler, but you knew he was in this.
Yeah.
You knew.
Yeah, and also, this is the fucking spoiler issue, so whatever. Yeah, you've probably already seen the movie.
So that's the question. So there's a ghost, and that ghost was probably a big slobbery fat guy who turned into a Slimer in death.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the ghost that is a green goat horn devil with wings and shit in this movie, then?
Well, you see, if you remember your Ghostbusters 2, and I know you do.
I do, yeah.
Okay, so you remember the brothers in the courtroom scene that were electrocuted.
Yeah, there's an electrocuted guy in this movie.
Oh, yeah, but in that one, they were like super cartoony, larger, like the one guy was just like crazy weird looking and the other one was like super stretched out and odd exaggerated features. And I think the idea is that when you die, you sort of become this snapshot of what you think you are.
Okay, so who thinks that they are a giant evil T-Rex balloon?
Obviously someone that's into heavy metal.
But no, I mean, I'm not even talking about the goat demon that's in this movie. I mean, literally, the guy who turns into... There's a balloon parade, and every one of the individual balloons is an evil ghost.
I mean, is it? Because they pop it with a, like, a Swiss Army knife.
One of them. The other ones all die to proton packs.
Yeah, but you would if you were a balloon.
So are they possessed by various other ghosts that don't look like that? What's the cosmology? Also, is there a heaven in the Ghostbusters universe?
Yes.
I mean, we've established at this point that there's some kind of under or nether world from which evil ghosts issue.
Yeah.
But is there a good... Are there good ghosts? Is there going to be... Is the sequel to this going to be them having to fight angel ghosts?
Yes, the sequel to this is Supernatural.
I've just always wondered this about Ghostbusters, that the cosmology of Ghostbusters is confusing because it always seems more like they're fighting monsters than ghosts.
Yeah, well, and in this one, I think we get the idea that like everything on the other side that wants to come back are ghosts that are mostly angry and like malevolent spirits.
Or might just be hungry for hot dogs.
Might be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's malevolent if you're a hot dog. And so it is truly frightening to me. Slimer is one of the scariest ghosts in this film.
Oh, that's true,
as
right.
A hot dog.
As a cartoon hot dog, you would be more frightened than most by the concept of the Slimer character.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm up to speed with that. Now, as a 10-year-old girl, of course, I am quite frightening in any given movie that I'm in, because 90% of the time I'm going to be possessed, and I'm just going to start reciting a nursery rhyme all slow.
Yeah.
We all
obviously.
Like, ring around the rosy.
Rah!
Yeah. That was a door slamming or something. I'm so tired of that trope in horror movies. I look, they're straight up running out of nursery rhymes at this point. You have some little kid going like, little Jack Horner. He stuck his thumb up your ass. The movie.
Man, if they named the movie, he stuck his thumb up your ass. The movie. Yeah. Yeah, I'm down. I am in. 100%. I am like his thumb. I'm in.
There's no way that's not gay porn. No, you're still in?
Yeah.
Knowing full well that there's... Okay.
Only if the full title is...
Full title with
the
colon.
He stuck his thumb in your ass, colon, the movie, so that it differentiates it from, obviously, the Chuck Tingle book, he stuck his thumb in your ass.
He stuck his thumb up, the concept of sticking his thumb up his own ass. Oh, my gosh. All right. So I'm sorry for digressing so bad. Patty goes off to chase the villain into the subway where she encounters another ghost.
Yeah, we get an electrocuted guy ghost because apparently this used to be right around where there was a prison. So,
Armed with this knowledge, she heads off to encounter the Ghostbusters right as they are being as they're finishing up an interview with their secretary, Kevin.
Kevin,
masterfully played by Chris Hemsworth. This character is fantastic.
Oh, Hemsworth, God bless you, sir.
Yeah, just so funny. So well done.
His various gags of like the covering his eyes for That Was Loud.
Yeah.
After he just
some minor stuff. The best gag for me with him is the sandwich one.
The hot dog one for me. This is the best one for me. It's like, oh, here's a picture for your business, and it's just a hot dog and a house. And they're like, I don't understand. He's like, well, the hot dog, there's nothing around it. So I thought that would symbolize a ghost holding it.
Oh, you're very cerebral. That's brilliant. But there's a scene at the end where someone takes a sandwich away from him and throws it because they're mad at him. And he just holds his hand up and someone throws the sandwich back to him.
Little help.
Little help.
sandwich flies back in.
Because he's playing that sort of oblivious, good-looking New York hipster, like sort of like Williamsburg hipster archetype that just sails through life without having to worry about it.
Yeah, he is. He's John Hamm on 30 Rock.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly what he's doing. He's doing the John Hamm on 30 Rock. He's too beautiful to have to care about his life at all.
Yeah.
So he's a fantastic character. I don't want to really say anything else about him. We're going to have to spoil what he becomes throughout the course of the film, of course. But
yeah.
Anyway, he goes off after they give him the job because in another amazing through line in this movie, Kristen Wiig's character, Aaron, is spectacularly like horny for him. And no one else is.
Yeah, that was the other good part. Is it's not everyone like fawning over him, just Aaron.
Yeah, Aaron's like gone. The my name's Aaron with an E for everything you want.
Oh my god! Also, the fact that he has a dog named My Cat.
Oh god, that was such.
Also,
good.
My dog lives with my parents.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. He lives with my parents anyway.
I love you, Hemsworth.
Hemsworth, you're amazing. I love that they gave him the end credits sequence. Okay, so Patty comes in to talk to them, and Patty tells them that she has encountered a ghost and wants to show them where she did.
Yep. And they go down to the tunnels. This is also where we get the logo for them.
Yeah, it's a brief introduction by yet another cameo by a New York like improv performer. That was Rob Corddry's, you know, Rob Corddry.
Yeah.
That was his younger brother, Nate.
Ah.
Nate Corddry playing that character. One of those like boho style artists that has it off but also goes out and does graffiti anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he draws their logo while Patty is trying to get him to stop doing graffiti.
And again, another great scene.
Yeah, it's fine. And then they go off and find a ghost in the subway, and they shoot at it with a proton pack that's kind of shitty. And it sets up one of the weirdest things in this movie for me. It's probably the only thing in this movie I didn't much care for, is the proton packs in this movie are like lassos. Like, they shoot a beam of they look, you know, it shoots the same cool-looking beam of energy. It's been modernized. But what it does every time they shoot it is it wraps around the ghost like a little lasso.
Well, it did that in the first movie.
Yeah, but in this movie, they don't use the traps enough. There's only one trap, and it gets used once. And the rest of the time, they just fling the ghosts around like bowling balls.
Yeah, I would say the final climactic fight scene with all of the ghosts that they have, it feels like they really wanted to have the proton packs just be straight up, like, anti-ghost laser beams rather than the way that it was established that they were.
Even in this movie, it's been established that the proton packs can't kill a ghost. They could just sort of whip it around. Maybe they really wanted to catch a live one, so they built the trap. But the proton packs do eventually kill ghosts.
Yeah, they eventually are just like, look, there's enough power in this that if we just zap you with it, it'll fuck you up.
Right. So, at any rate, they shoot this ghost with the beam, but they can't kill the ghost with the beam because the power's not good enough. So instead, they just drag themselves out of the way until the ghost gets hit by a subway.
And the train goes flying past with the ghost still in the back.
With a ghost in it. But of course, when it gets hit, it slimes all over the place and slimes Kristen Wiig real good again.
Yep.
Just real good. She gets slimed a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, great. Now they're a foursome. They are the four Ghostbusters.
Yeah, there's a slight moment where they're like, no, Patty, you can't join us. We're all science people. And she's like, no, but I am.
No, she's joining you. I'm joining you. Plus, I have a car.
And they're like, oh, all right.
I was also kind of sad they didn't keep running on her thing about how she could replace Chris Hemsworth's character in a second. Where she was like, I got a cousin, Mookie, that'll do that same job for Vienna sausages. I was like, man, I want to hear more about Mookie.
She gets a hearse that they then turn into their Ecto-1.
Mm-hmm. And we keep getting set up that Holtzman is like this crazy mad scientist inventor. She builds more proton packs. She builds a ghost trap. And they go off to catch a ghost at a rock concert.
Yeah, because this is where the next place that our main villain has decided to put his little ghost bomb.
Mm-hmm. So he puts a ghost bomb there. It summons a green demon-y thing. But, of course, because ghosts in this movie are just ghosts. They can also be, like, possessing entities and so on. It starts by possessing just a mannequin and running around like that.
Yeah. Which, also, that's a room full of nightmares. I'm not going in there.
Yeah, that was pretty great. So they yell at the mannequin. It pops into a ghost demon. They go up, and there's a really, really horrible metal band playing.
Just the worst.
Just awful. Looks like Dane Cook is fronting them. They're called the Masters of Mayhem. I don't know if that's a real metal band or not.
But if they are, you're bad.
They're
and
terrible.
Feel bad.
Yeah. Good sports for being in the movie if you are, even though you know you're real bad. Also, that's the worst cameo in the movie, by the way. The Aussie cameo in this movie.
Yeah. That was one of the ones where I was like, oh, that's oddly forced.
Yeah, that's it. Whoa, boy. Okay. Well, anyway. They shoot proton packs at it. There's that funny scene you saw in the trailer where the ghost perches on Patty's shoulders and she tries to just leave.
Yeah.
Eventually, they catch it in the trap. This sets up one of the first major cameos by a Ghostbuster in this movie. Because, of course, they can't have a cameo for Egon, but we have already seen him in the movie because there's a bust of him outside of Aaron's Princeton office.
Yeah.
Which was fantastic. It was really nice to see that.
Yeah, they didn't, you know, draw a lot of attention to it. But, you know, if you're looking, you're like, oh, there it is. Aw.
Yeah, it's really nice. But anyway, here comes Bill Murray, and he's playing one of those world-famous skeptics.
Yeah, he goes around debunking ghosts
he's
and
doing a
psychics
James Randi.
And stuff.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing a James Randi thing.
Yeah.
And so he shows up at their place of business, I guess, demanding to see the ghost and being very accusatory and mean.
Now, the thing that we get in this movie is before that, we find out that Aaron had seen a ghost when she was a kid and got made fun of a lot when she was younger because no one believed her and they called her Ghost Girl, and Abby was the only person that believed her, and that's how they became friends and really got into the whole ghost thing.
Right.
And so Aaron has a lot to prove as far as this goes because she doesn't want to have that same feeling again where she knows she's seen something and no one believes her.
So anyway, the end result is that she lets the ghost out so she can prove something to Bill Murray, but all she does is kill Bill Murray.
Yep, the ghost flies out knocking Bill Murray out the window and
smash cut to a police officer asking you threw him out the window. So at this point we get introduced to one of my favorite little through lines in the movie because the like FBI shows up to drag the Ghostbusters up to see the mayor.
Oh, my God. And it has one of my favorite UCB alums as one of the guys.
Yeah, that's Matt Walsh.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's always the hardest one. His name is the hardest to remember.
Yeah.
But yeah, Matt Walsh is in this movie playing one of the FBI agents. It's fantastic. So anyway, it turns out in this movie, as opposed to the William Atherton kind of character in the previous Ghostbusters movies, the mayor is nice.
Also, they already know. They're like, yeah, we know ghosts are real. Anyway, yeah, we're trying to deal with it.
Yeah, ghosts are super real. You guys need to knock this off because we're dealing with it.
Yeah, we don't want other people to know, so we're doing it.
Thanks for dealing with the ghosts you've already dealt with. Please stop. We're going to discredit you, but in the meantime, it's been very nice to meet you.
Yeah, you can keep on doing your thing, but just know that anytime you do anything, we're going to call it a hoax.
Yeah, so that's kind of nice. Also, that's my favorite Holtzman scene in the movie. When she's just messing with a Matt Walsh FBI character, I could watch that all day. Even when she's done talking and the scene's still going and you can see her in the background just pawing at him. Just to bug him. That is the best. Anyway, they all go back to their ghost place all dejected, but Holtzman has a surprise for them because this movie has a little bit of Men in Black in it, in that she has built them a bunch of fancy ghost weapons.
Yeah, all different weird ways to get ghosts. So you've got your ghost shredder.
Yeah, the ghost shredder. They built Abby gets a power fist.
Yeah, you get a power fist, and then you get a like a little short-range gun that just blows shit up.
Yeah, which we don't even get to see shot in that scene. She says it's not ready. So instead, you get to see the grenades.
Yeah, you get the anti-ghost grenades.
Which, in the movie, blow ghosts into clouds of smoke.
Yeah.
We don't know if it kills them. I don't know what's going on.
It discorporates them.
I guess, yeah. They become ghost discorporated. G-H-O-S-T-S. Whoa.
Looks like they're dead again. They're ghost discorporated.
I had that in my head so bad. I've had that Kids Incorporated song in my head for like 3 days now.
Hey, man, once it gets in there, it doesn't leave.
I know.
It worms in there and then lives.
Which is weird because because we were talking about this earlier, I, for the life of me, thought that Kids Incorporated was another show.
Yeah.
I thought it was the show Kids Songs, the TV show, which is where some kids find an abandoned TV studio and take it over and start playing music videos in it.
Yeah, as soon as you were like, oh yeah, Kids Incorporated, that show where kids find an abandoned TV station, I was like, the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, the thing is, Kids Songs has a boring intro theme. I mean, it's not terrible. It's like, Kids Songs, we want it, or something like that was the basic through line. But Kids Incorporated has the greatest theme song in the history of children's television.
Yeah.
So it's completely, the two shows became one show in my head over the years.
That's fair.
Yeah. Anyway, back to this movie, because we're actually running way behind.
Yeah.
So there's some business. There's some more business. They go and encounter the bad guy at a hotel where he oddly decides immediately to kill himself instead of facing them.
Yeah. They're like, look, it's over. We're going to shut this off. There's nothing you can do. And he's like, all right. And then just kills himself on his own machine.
Right. Then it turns out that was so he could become a ghost. And now he's a super evil ghost. And he takes over the body of Chris Hemsworth and nonsense ensues.
Yep. And the scenes with Hemsworth now as the evil guy, also great. The fact that Hemsworth gets to do both, I thought was wonderful.
Oh, so good. I hope this guy knows how to ride a motorcycle.
Yeah, he does.
It's really good. Also, I love the shot of Hemsworth showing up in a Ghostbusters outfit with, like, duct tape for stripes and a name tag that's like, hi, my name is Chris and all that. And he's like, I want to be a Ghostbuster. I made all this stuff.
Look, you can't deny it. I'm part of the team and whoop.
So good. Anyway, they have to get... They fight their way through the city. There's ghosts everywhere. He manages to break some barrier that completely floods the city with ghosts. Might as well at this point switch, because we are running out of time here, to switch to talking about the various cameos, the cool cameos you get in this.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see.
So when they first go to the hotel, you get your Annie Potts.
Yeah, Janine's there. She is the front
receptionist
desk.
For the front desk.
Yeah, receptionist for the front desk.
And gives them the, yeah, what do you want?
Yep, straight up Janine doing a great job there.
Yep.
Let's see. Then when all hell's breaking loose, three of them are driving around in the Ecto-1 because Kristen Wiig is off on her own, having confronted the mayor. Also, one of my favorite lines in the movie, by the way. The mayor gets a line that was, never compare me to the Jaws mayor! that was just a dead-on great joke. So the three of them find Slimer. And then Slimer steals the Ecto-1 and drives away in it.
Yeah, and then when Kristen Wiig is trying to get to them, she calls for a cab and wants it to take her to Chinatown. He's like, nah, I'm not going there. What? Why not? Look, that's about a block farther south than I want to go.
And she's like, but there's ghosts all over the fucking place.
And he's like, look, I know the three things in life. I don't go to Chinatown, and I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Yeah, I don't drive Chinatown, I don't drive no wackos, and I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
And Dan Aykroyd, everyone. That there you
him.
Go.
Although I also liked it when she was like, there's ghosts everywhere, and he immediately was like, nah, those are just class 5 free-float inspectors. he does not look like the Dan Aykroyd you remember, though. My girlfriend who was watching the movie with us didn't even recognize him.
No. It's sad.
Yeah.
I barely recognized him. If he didn't have that little crystal skull full of vodka, I never would have known it was him.
Oh, man. So, yeah, they both show up at that point. And don't worry, there's two more Ghostbusters out there that are still alive, and they both have cameos, too. They're just in the credits. So they battle their way to the villain in Chris Hemsworth's body. They shoot a bunch of lasers at him. He does some Peter Pan jokes. And then he just kind of lets the body drop.
Yeah, he lets the body hit the floor.
Yeah. And then they have the little callback to the original Ghostbusters scene of where Ray accidentally imagines the Marshmallow Man, who, yeah. By the way, is another cameo in the movie.
Yeah, it's one of the floats from like a Macy's parade thing.
Yeah, it was very amusing to see it again.
Yeah.
So he taunts them by saying, what form would you like me to take?
Yeah.
And Holtzman's like, I don't know, a target? But unfortunately, it's Leslie Jones, Patty, who says, a little friendly ghost. And so he shows up as the logo.
Yeah, he's just the little logo ghost, and he's like, oh, what do you mean, like this?
Is this good? And he's straight up a cartoon. It's Roger Rabbiting all over the place.
Yeah.
Roger Rabbit's up their toilet real bad.
And Roger Rabbit's out the window. So then he, of course, turns into the giant evil version, which you've seen in the trailers.
Yeah, he turns into a way bigger than the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man giant monster that pops out of a building and stomps around.
Yep. And
unfortunately, he's super crazy huge, and it's neat to watch him punching things and looking at vehicles and stomping on cars and so on, but there's very little interaction between him and them, and he's only in the giant ghost form for like 3 minutes before they solve the problem with Technobabble.
Well, yeah, because they don't, unlike the Marshmallow Man, they don't really get to do anything to him.
No, they shoot lasers near him, and it causes a fire to burst and burn his face a little, and then later they shoot him in the nuts.
Yep, they do get a nut shot.
Yeah. So, but otherwise, he just sort of is unengaged with them and wandering around stomping the city. If anything, I feel like the third act of this movie kind of falls apart because it just goes a little too CGI. But we didn't even talk about the the centerpiece combat sequence in the film, where you get to everyone use their cool gun.
Yeah, everybody gets to use the new devices.
Yeah, and you get to watch Holtzman stomping around like a crazy action movie badass. With
the very end where she gets her two little, like, proton guns and just murders everything.
Yeah, murders like 15 ghosts while an action movie version of the song plays.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, did you notice the new recording of the song during the film? The Fallout Boy and Missy Elliott Ghostbusters song? I don't know if you see it. Shows up in the movie.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't really hold a, I mean, the nice thing about it is that Ray Parker Jr. helped write it.
Yay. Thank you, Ray. Ray Parker Jr. is Ghostbusters.
Anyway, they do some straight up Star Trek style techno babble and are like, hey, if we reverse the proton energy field by blowing up a thingamabob, we'll get a total protonic reversal that'll cause a schmiggity boo to block it into the fliggies. And they're like, okay, let's do that. And then they do that, and a giant trap traps the giant ghost.
Yep. They turn the portal that was spewing all the ghosts into a trap that traps all of them.
Yep.
And also apparently reverses all of the destruction that happened.
Yes.
I don't know how that works.
Turns night into daytime. Does that somehow.
I'm like, man, I get the idea of using this vortex to then turn into a, like, suction instead of a blow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen Spaceballs. I know you can turn from suck to blow.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone can.
Yeah. But with this one, it also, like, repairs the building that got destroyed and everyone's better now. And I'm like, that's weird. That's kind of an odd thing to do.
That was a little weird. And also we get a sequence of Kristen Wiig and Abby having to dive into the netherworld.
Yeah, so that their hair can get white.
Yeah, again, I felt like that was a little too far. Like, yeah. The CGI didn't look all that great. We had bad flying effects. I feel like we could have done without that sequence in the film, and it would have been still really, really good.
Yeah.
It just didn't look like they were ready to do it.
No, I mean, it was just not necessary, really.
Yeah, it was like I was saying, I think it's a bridge too far in the film. It was too CGI-ish.
Meh.
Anyway, yeah, their hair gets turned white by being exposed to hell, and then they get popped out, and blah, blah, blah. Then we get an ending, which we don't want to talk about too much. The sandwich joke, Ernie Hudson shows up for a couple of seconds as Patty's uncle.
The one who has all the hearses.
Yep.
And then we get Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, Sigourney Weaver shows up mid-credits as Holtzman's, like, mentor.
Yeah, being like, and what the hell is this light?
Oh. Is this a safety light? And she's like, no, safety lights are for dudes.
That's right. Safety lights are for dudes.
I don't really want to spoil good jokes like that, but you know what? It's fine.
Whatever. Like I said, we're in the spoilers. Fuck you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah. The jokes in this movie are above average in general.
I enjoy them.
There's a lot of really, really good joke sequences.
Yeah, it is a movie that I would like to see again just to look for more little things in the background.
Yes. I'm sure there are a lot of background. I was like, when I watched it for the second time, I was definitely watching all the different, like, background signs to see if there were any that were jokes. I couldn't come up with any off the top of my head, but I'm sure they're in there.
Yeah.
So, there you go. There's a lot of after-credit sequences. There's a really great dance sequence of Chris Hemsworth dancing and controlling the...
Although, even then, I'm like, God damn it, does every movie have to end with a dance
sequence? Oh, I know, with a CGI-style dance sequence.
Come on, now.
At least it's just set to Ghostbusters. It's not set to I'm a Believer or All-Star.
Oh, come on, give me a Smash Mouth cover of Ghostbusters. In fact, we smash cut to Smash Mouth covering Ghostbusters.
They're doing it at a Smash Burger.
And they're all smashed.
Well, obviously.
Duh.
I mean, come on. All right, so there you go.
Now we're going to get to our best and worst. Best thing in the movie for you, Jeff.
Holtzman.
Highlight. Yep. Holtzman. I'm just going to go ahead and throw mine in there, too. Holtzman is the best thing in this movie.
Holtzman steals the show. I love...
If you want to pare it down to one thing. That Holtzman did. Give me a highlight of Holtzman.
Oh, the best Holtzman line? Okay, well, I already have my best Holtzman line. It's the part where she's talking to the FBI agents, and they're like, do you have any idea how many federal violations you've committed? One? No. Is it two?
No.
No.
Is it one?
Is it one? So good. So, I mean, speaking... Side note here, I know that Kate McKinnon is gay, but do you think that Holtzman read as gay as well?
From what I've heard, they were going to play that up a little more, because she does read that way in the movie.
A little bit,
I hear they toned it way down from what it was. Like, it was going to be a little more obvious in the original one.
This movie wasn't going to play in China anyway,
because
China doesn't like ghosts. That's a literal thing. The first Ghostbusters movies had a tough time in China because China has a big old embargo against
anything that looks dead.
Anything that represents the undead, yeah.
Yeah.
So this movie wasn't going to play there. They might as well let the main character be gay.
Yeah, well.
Well, if she's the main character, I don't know. She's the best character.
She is a main character.
So, I don't know. I think in interviews she's described the Holtzman character as being a pansexual beast, which I'm fine with.
Yeah.
I also like her little moment at the very end when she does the toast and like all the walls come down. And she's all like stammering her way through a very heartfelt thing.
Yeah.
That was great. So, okay, your favorite thing in the movie.
It's definitely going to be Holtzman as well.
Yeah.
I fucking love that so much.
Such a good character. What was your favorite part?
I'm going to have her dancing around to DeBarge.
Oh, God. But DeBarge, by the way, is my go-to karaoke jam.
And also the fact that we then get a DeBarge joke where she's like, I hate to DeBarge in.
Oh, yeah. That was
like, oh, is that who does that song?
Abby popping into to I hate to DeBarge in. I thought that was a Devo song. I've been doing that. That's been my karaoke go-to for years.
Oh, so good.
Rhythm of the Night, because it's just so much fun to do, and it gets the crowd dancing. And I feel like if you know that song at all, you also know DeBarge, because what a crazy name.
The of Barge.
Yeah. What was the worst thing in the movie?
Worst thing for me is, I want to say Patty, the way that they used her towards the end.
Yeah,
because one of the things I really wanted to see was her knowledge actually matter,
because
it basically didn't. I knew that the guy who looks like an electrocuted guy is here because there was a prison. Does that matter to anything?
Right, and there's that sequence with the ley lines where they're just,
and that's what I was going to bring up.
Yeah,
she should have been like, oh yeah, I know all about New York, and I know that there's a theory that ley lines cross New York, and these are significant places because of that.
Yeah, and all she knows is that the hotel where the ley lines would cross is famously creepy. And it's like, well, yeah, but we already established that that's where the ley lines cross. It doesn't matter if the hotel is creepy or not.
Yeah, her like superpower in this is she knows a lot about New York, and it never came up. It wasn't even like, oh my God, the streets are covered in ghosts, but I know a way to get through New York to wherever we're going faster.
I would also say her superpower in this movie is that she is super strong, because there's a sequence where Abby gets possessed and jumps on her back, and while holding Holtzman out the window by one arm, Patty manages to fling Abby like 8 feet backwards into a wall.
That is also true.
So I think she also has that crazy super strength you get when you work for the MTS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be the low point for me, is that they didn't use the Patty character enough. They gave her hooks, but then it never really paid off in a good way.
Yeah.
So that would be for me. For you, low point?
I'm going to go ahead and say the third act, not the ending. The ending of the film is fantastic. It's very funny. It's very heartfelt. But the third act, with way too much CGI in the ghost fighting sequences. I mean, I really liked the little slow motion Holtzman running around killing ghosts with little pistols. I mean, I thought that was just very well shot and cool looking. But and also that sequence of the four of them getting to use their cool weapons and kill ghosts, and it was really neat to watch, is going to be a super inspiring thing for like today's kids, because Lord knows I was Egon for Halloween 3 years in a row.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the kids getting loving these new Ghostbusters, and that sequence is important. But just the dive into hell part, I was like, I don't need this. This is a little too much CGI ghost for me.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That's probably my low point.
All right. So now, ratings for this movie. We're going to give it a 1 to 5. That'll give us our out of 10. Jeff, ratings for Ghostbusters 2016.
This is getting a 4.
All right.
Actually, I think I'll give it a 4.5.
Good.
This was really good. I very much enjoyed it. I did not expect to like it as much as I did. I didn't have the same reservations that the internet does.
No.
I wasn't like, oh, it's going to kill my childhood or whatever. Because you know what? Ghostbusters childhood has been killed plenty of times.
Yeah. And also, that DVD still exists. If you want to watch Ghostbusters, you can go watch Ghostbusters.
Yeah, if you want to watch the real Ghostbusters, you can watch it. But you're going to be disappointed, because it's got some of them rose-colored glasses things happening in it. But this movie was fantastic. I would totally watch this again. I hope there's another one.
Yeah. All right.
You?
I'm going to go ahead and give this, I'm going to give it a 4.5 as well,
okay.
Actually. We're
going
to get this total a 9 out of 10. Super excited about this film.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to go see it again. Like I was saying before, I want to just watch it again to look for little things in the background.
Yeah.
That's how I know a movie is really good, is when either I cannot wait to see it again, or I never want to watch it again. That's how I know a movie is good.
What's an example of a movie that was so good that you never want to watch it again?
Requiem for a Dream.
Oh.
Is a movie that was amazing, and I never want to see it again.
Okay, I feel that way about a few movies. Yeah, Requiem for a Dream is a good example. I might also throw that way towards Radio Flyer.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, that is some torture porn. That is, it's two little kids and their abusive dad, and one kid's like getting deader and deader from his dad.
Yeah.
And then he builds an airplane out of a wagon, but it turns out that's all just a dream, it's messed up. So that kind of movie. I see what you're getting. The
movie that's really good, but you're like, I don't need to see that again.
No, I'm pretty good. I'm fine. You know, another one I would say is probably The Others. Like where the with the twist, when you're like, I don't need to see the twist again. I'm
yeah,
fine.
No, when a movie really hinges on that, it's like Sixth Sense. Yeah. I've seen it more than once, but I'm like, no, one was good enough.
You know what I feel that way about is every single one of M. Night Shyamalan's movies.
Yeah, except for the ones that I wanted to have seen zero times. Yeah, but unfortunately, I saw it once.
All I'm saying is I never want to see any of them ever again.
All I'm saying is I saw The Happening, and I was like, wow.
And I've seen Avatar.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Just The Last Airbender.
I have seen The Last Airbender. I've seen The Happening. I've seen Devil.
Have you seen, what's the one with Will Smith and his son?
Beyond Earth?
Beyond Earth, starring Commander Cypher Rage, Jake.
No, I have not seen that. Although, what I do want to see is, I think, what was it called? Like, The Visit? The one where the kids go see the grandma?
Yeah, the one about sundowning.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've heard that's really good, but I've heard the reason it's good is because he's not all that involved in it.
Well, yeah.
It's like a stripped-down old-school horror movie. It's a lot better for him than other... Because isn't the one where, like, there's a devil in an elevator also him, and that one's pretty good?
I liked that one. Devil, I enjoyed because it uses the space of being trapped in an elevator fairly well.
Yeah. And living it up while they're going down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, for my money, the nadir of the Shyamalan movies is not The Happening, but instead is Lady in the Water.
Oh, no. For me, it is 100% The Happening.
But Lady in the Water is so bad.
Thing is, I can watch Lady in the Water. Man, The Happening has 5 watchable minutes. And that's when John Leguizamo is on screen. And other than that, it is just... the worst.
I'll tell you what, listeners, write in and let us know which is the worst M. Night Shyamalan movie.
In fact, we're going to make a poll
poll. We'll do it. We're going to put together a poll, and it'll have all the Shyamalan movies. You can tell us which one's the worst. Because Lady in the Water is the worst, it's going to win.
No,
but...
Happening, the worst movie. The only reason it might not win is because you probably haven't seen it.
Oh, you know what? The reason that neither of them is going to win is because of Last Airbender, because people have all that attachment to the cartoon.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, I love the cartoon. It's a great cartoon, but it. Anyway, we're going on and on.
Thank you so much for listening to us. We are only able to do this because of your support. If you want to support us, you can go to Patreon and find us. You can give us some money that lets us do things like the In Theaters Now, lets us do some live play stuff on the channel. So we always appreciate that. And of course, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a movie mastery that will just be some random crap that you want us to watch. And not in a theaters now, so you can suggest movies for that. We've got the big movie list on the website.
Yeah, I'll put a new one up for, oh my God, we're almost into August. I got to get that done.
Yeah, so we'll have that. We can get any suggestions you want on our big movie list on SystemMasteryPodcast.com. You can find that, make suggestions there. And, of course, you can find all of our other stuff on System Mastery Podcast for our RPG reviews or just the... show Afterthought, where we just talk about nonsense bullshit. And if you want, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or System Mastery at Gmail.
And on Reddit.
So you can go to r/System Mastery and tell us how dumb we are. And we love that. We love every second of it.
Oh, yeah.
And let us know your opinion about Ghostbusters. Tell me about how angry you are that there are ladies in a movie.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's the worst when there's ladies in a movie.
I hate it. So much.
All right, final thought for me. I was just looking at YouTube where I have the Kids Songs TV show intro up so I could see it again for the first time, but I'm not wearing my glasses, and I thought it said Kids Dongs.
Kids Dongs. We want them. And on that note, you guys have a great week.